Hello and welcome to the All 80s Movies Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the blockbusters, the flops, and everything in between from one of the freshest decades for movies, the 1980s. I'm your host, Bill Bant, and along with me on this journey back to the 80s is my co-host, Jason Masick. Hello, Jason.
I don't want to be the only asshole in heaven, Bill.
Hey, Bill. Here is Sub-Zero. Now, Plain Zero. Bill, it doesn't get any better than that, honestly. We should just end the podcast right there.
I think so. All right. Thanks for listening, viewers. Now, that's right, listeners. Today's movie is the 1987 sci-fi action film The Running Man, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Richard Dawson, directed by Paul Michael Glazer. This movie is rated R with a running time of 1 hour and 41 minutes. It is based on the novel The Running Man, written by Richard Bachman, a.k.a. Stephen King. So what is this movie about? What's on the box? If you grew up in the 1980s and went to your local video store to rent this movie, this would be the description you would find on the back of the VHS box. What is on the box? Take it away, Jason.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is running for his life in the high-tech futuristic action-adventure The Running Man, co-starring Maria Conchita Alonso, Yaphet Kotto, Dweezil Zappa, Mick Fleetwood, Jim Brown, Jesse the Body Ventura, and, in a critically acclaimed performance, Family Feud host Richard Dawson. The year is 2019. Television is now ruling people's lives. In the 21st century, the popular audience participation game show is The Running Man, where convicts can win pardons instead of parting gifts by defeating murderous henchmen known as stalkers. The stalkers haven't had much of a challenge lately until Ben Richards, Schwarzenegger, came along. Wrongly convicted of slaughtering 1,500 innocent people, Richards is the next contestant to fight for his life and his freedom. When Running Man host Damon Killian, Dawson, says, "Come on down, be prepared to pay with your life." But Ben Richards isn't going down without a fight. Off Schwarzenegger goes into the burned out sections of Los Angeles to face four of Killian's ace stalkers. Sub-Zero wielding his razor sharp hockey sticks. Buzzsaw, the maniacal motorcycle riding slasher. Dynamo practicing his deadly electric shock treatment. And Fireball with his mighty flame throwing arsenal. Now the entire country is glued to the tube in a heart pounding sudden death battle.
The Running Man. That must have been the smallest print on the back of the VHS box, Jason.
That was definitely a mouthful.
God, so that was what's on the box? Or boxes? So
it was just going to say that was on a dozen boxes.
Oh, my goodness.
I have to say it was pretty funny because I do sometimes enjoy this segment, and I enjoy like transcribing the segment when I find the VHS box and like, oh, man, this just brings me back, especially looking at the picture on the VHS box. And then you flip it over and you see it. But when I was transcribing this, I was like, holy shit, man, this is taking forever. I've got a movie to watch. I've got things to do with my life. And I'm writing things like off Schwarzenegger goes into the burned out sec. And I'm like, oh, my God, we're really going to break down this entire movie. Bill Bant, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm just glad to be here with you. That's all that matters.
All right. There we go. All right. So let's move on to our first segment, which is earliest memories. Jason, what are your earliest memories of The Running Man?
I have fond early memories of this film because it's simple entertainment for me. And I didn't see it in the movie theater. I saw it on cable after. And I believe I actually saw this before Predator. I remember seeing Predator late, too. I don't know why that happened, but Predator technically came out the summer before this film. Yeah. Schwarzenegger had two big movies that year, that being 1987. So I didn't see it in the theaters. One of the first memories I have was the music. I'm a big film score guy, and Harold Faltermeyer did the score for this, heavy on the synthesizer. Faltermeyer, you know, having notable scores with Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop. And the famed themes, Axel F, the Top Gun theme or Top Gun anthem, I should say. So the music, I always was one of those things that stuck with me. And I remembered coming out of this movie. Schwarzenegger's one-liners are so bad that they're good. It's just one of those things. The game show concept in a dystopian future
was something that really got me going. So Schwarzenegger's character's name is Ben Richards, but for some reason what stuck with me after seeing this movie was the moniker, the Butcher of Bakersfield. I just thought that was a great bad guy moniker. And then the female lead, of course, in now, 1987, I was going on 13, 14 years old. And I'm looking for who's going to be the hot girl in the 80s movie. And for this funny, Bill, I wrote down Rachel Ticketon was what I remember. And I don't know why I was doing this weird crossover with Total Recall tonight when I was doing this. And it's I apologize to everyone out there. It's obviously Maria Conchita Alonso is the female lead. She plays Amber Mendez in this film. And I remember as a kid, she didn't really do it for me. I knew she was pretty, but I just, you know, things change. Perspectives change because for some reason she does it for me now. Don't ask me why, Bill. Don't ask me why. I remember the dancers in this movie. And I'm going to do a little jazz hands for you, Bill. It's all about the dancers in The Running Man. We get a lot of dancers in this one. But again, coming of age, I enjoyed the dancers in this movie. A lot of 80s hairdos and hiked up leotards and flesh colored tights. And they're doing their thing out there. I remember Maria Conchita doing her workout in this movie for some reason. It stuck with me. In her lingerie on the weight bench?
On the Bowflex, I think it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Of course, Arnold's goofy one-piece unitard costume in this thing. It's ridiculous. I always remember, you know, afterward and seeing this movie over and over again when I was younger, choosing, you know, trying to decide who my favorite villain was out of all the quote-unquote stalkers. I was always, you know, here's one thing, Bill, that I remember. One of my earliest memories was being disappointed with Captain Freedom. I'm looking forward to Jesse the Body doing something in this fucking movie. And I was so disappointed that he doesn't do a damn thing. He doesn't do anything in this movie except for some jazzercise. And we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
I also remember Dynamo going out like a bitch, getting electrocuted in his underwear. Yaphet Kotto, rest in peace.
Yes.
Big fan. Alien. For me, actually, one of my favorite roles, Mosley, man, for Midnight Run. He's made, you know, Yaphet Kotto. So I remember him being the good kind of sidekick buddy of Schwarzenegger's in this film. Richard Dawson steals the show often. I mean, he's a lot of time can probably since he's playing himself, but he's used to this role. Obviously, you know, he'd been the host for many years on Family Feud. And then one of my memories is just loving how Dawson goes out. I think he has the best death of them, everybody in this film. Gosh, you know, this is another movie, 80s movie, where Schwarzenegger just yet gets to exhibit his brute strength in moments. And he's just all muscle. There's no real, you know, other fighting skills on display here. He's just, he looks good in the movie. And he was 39 years old when they shot this. So those are some of my memories. I got another random one. I'm going to go into this brief story, and it's just kind of funny because years later, I was just a big fan of Harold Faltermeyer and the synth score, and I bought this soundtrack, and I was in college, and this was probably, well, it had to have been 91, 92. This will be the second time I'm bringing up Jeff Cloudy on this podcast, but it was late one night. I'm hanging out in my dorm room. He and I and my buddy Sippy were just kind of, it was late night. We're just kind of crashing. We're zoning out, listening to some music. And I had the Running Man soundtrack on. What a random, I was such a nerd just playing movie soundtracks. It wasn't like any cool, like music of the time, you know, or lyrical music. And Jeff was like, what is this? This is pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, this is just good to kind of fall asleep to actually. I don't know what that says actually about the soundtrack, but, that's one of my random earlier memories about this movie is the score in college, listening to it in my dorm room over and over again. So that's what I have. What about you, Bill Bant? What are your early memories attached to The Running Man?
So like you, I did not see this in the theater. I think for the most of Schwarzenegger's early movies, I always just rented them. I always just thought they were just solid rentals. Because for me, like as much as I like Schwarzenegger movies, I didn't feel they were, I need to go to the theater and see them. Mm-hmm. But I know for this one, it always appealed to me with the sense of the game show aspect of it.
Right.
Being in the future. So I thought that was kind of neat. But like you, yeah, earliest memories, definitely the dancers, because they're spotlighted a lot.
Oh, yeah. Throughout. Sure.
The other thing that always stands out is the tunnels when they get shot into the game.
Bless. God bless you. 100%. 100%. Always loved it as a kid.
That was always amazing. I wouldn't like that ending, though, to being caught in that little net. Then I'm like, yeah, you got whiplash.
Oh, yeah.
You're done right there.
We'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Just the crazy, ridiculous stalkers that were in this. They were just all so silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do remember kind of being a little bit disappointed when the movie was over. There was just something about it that just felt off to me.
Sure.
I could never put my finger on it. So I always consider this like a second tier Schwarzenegger film.
Okay. I think that's fair in retrospect.
Like, I thought it was okay. I wasn't in love with it. Of course, you know, all the Schwarzenegger one-liners, because that was really his big thing that kind of took off. Was that with like Commando? Was that really the one? I mean, because, you know, he has a one-liner in Terminator that he's, I'll be back, that he's known for. But then really,
which he brings back in this film.
Exactly. Which works great.
And which obviously he goes on to use several times. But yeah, no, I think you're right. Commando is really the film where the one-liners take off. That becomes part of his kind of like his
repertoire.
Yeah, exactly.
But I loved Dawson's comeback on that. Like, yeah, only in reruns. So that was kind of cool. I was like, all right, that was a good comeback to it. So yeah, that's really my earliest memories of The Running Man.
Yeah. I'm just glad that you brought up the rocket slides going down the tunnels.
Oh, yeah.
As a way to enter the game. It's just completely badass, especially look at, you know, as a teenage kid, you know, I'm watching just going like, yeah, I want to ride that thing. And yeah, I don't want to come out at the end of the tunnel because it is not safe at all. They did not set that up correctly. But yeah, man, I think you're spot on with saying it's a bit of a second tier Schwarzenegger film, like kind of in the raw deal second tier. You know, it's not going to be up there with obviously Terminator T2, True Lies, or Predator, of course. It'll be right underneath there. But yeah, I still find it entertaining. You know, and as far as like some of my other initial comments upon watching it, I again just have to go back to poor Jesse the Body Ventura, man. The film just does him dirty. Just does him dirty. Upon rewatch, there's something. Here's a general commentary I was thinking about, Bill, is that there's something about 80s films that they just seem easy to watch. I found it still to be an easy watch. This isn't a struggle to get through, no matter how, like, it's so bad, it's good type of movie it is. Like, they just get to it. They get to the action. They get to the point, it seems. Granted, there's a lot of dancing in this movie.
there's a lot of dancing.
But it still moves in some way where I'm not exhausted after I've watched the film, or it's not a total bore. It's just simple entertainment. And I appreciate it for that. There's just something, again, just something about 80s. They figured out the structure. They figured out, don't get me wrong, it's not a perfect film. It's not like a Back to the Future, which is just completely, this has brilliant structure and just written perfectly from beginning to end. You know, acts 1, 2, and 3. It's not quite on that par. It's still, I had fun with it. This is not a great film. Not all of it holds up well. I think I was in denial about it as a kid. Meaning I really just wanted it to be cooler than it was. Exactly. I think I let my imagination go and imagined cooler villains, cooler versions of the stalkers than what actually is in the film. And now watching, I'm like, oh yeah, these guys are fucking lame. Oh my God. But still just kind of campy in a way. It's still fun. The idea of it was fun. So that's really all I got.
Yeah. I think when you mention about it moving in a way, it's almost weird. Once they got into the game, I almost felt like it moved too fast because it was like stalker. I really wanted to see more, I guess, in the sense of the stalking aspect of like what these guys could really do. It was like they just got thrown in, Schwarzenegger squared up with them, killed him in 2 minutes, and then the next guy showed up. That just felt awkward to me. It was almost like going to like a boxing match and you just watch fight after fight after fight after fight. The two guys go in the ring, they fight, they get out, the next two guys come in right away, and that's it. There's no introducing or any of that kind of stuff. It just goes fight, 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 fight. And that's what I don't like about it. And then the writer in me watching this again was, unfortunately, I didn't see the point of the love interest. I probably would have made her part of the resistance.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Make the resistance more important to the story.
Oh, completely. Sure, sure.
Because
they're in the beginning and then they come in at the end. And obviously they're alluded to throughout when they're trying to get the uplink code and they're going to try to reach the resistance and so that they can take over the broadcast. But it's funny that you bring up Amber Mendez. Sorry if I cut you off, man.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
That character, because I was going over my earliest memories before watching the film and I'm trying to remember, what do I recall about this movie just based off on my raw memory? I was like, oh yeah, what's her role in this again? Oh, I think she has something to do with the resistance. That's what it is. Cause that's what I thought, and then I'm watching the movie. She has nothing to do with the resistance.
No.
Almost just there by accident. Really. It's all by accident.
But it's funny at the end, all of a sudden she's leading a group of the resistance and knows how to use a gun. What, no that, problem.
I don't know. Bill, that didn't make sense to you? That made complete sense to me. I was like, oh yeah, she knows how to use this automatic weapon and I can understand why she's suited up and she's going to join the resistance. She is now a freedom fighter.
Exactly.
That leap was stupid. What are you doing? I totally agree with you, Bill. I was like, what is happening right now? Why? How? What? When did she learn how to fire a gun? Wasn't she just like running in circles, screaming like a chicken with her head cut off 5 minutes ago?
Exactly.
Not knowing what to do, where to hold. And she was trying to run away. Like, what? Anyway, I think it's interesting also, too, that you bring up because so it's funny because we have the remake of or the reboot of Mortal Kombat has just been released. And that's, the original, it's based on a video game that's about a tournament. Like, it's just guys fighting one another. It's mano a mano, and it's fight after fight after fight. And in this film, you're saying it kind of goes a little, from a writer's standpoint, it goes a little bit too quickly. And that's interesting to bring that up because I personally agree. I would have felt like, or I would have liked to seen, let's say, for instance, Schwarzenegger goes up against Sub-Zero. That's the first stalker he has to face, first opponent. Right. And it would be cool. Now, granted, he has two teammates at this point. We have Weiss and Laughlin. Mm-hmm. And yet Laughlin is Yaphet Kotto. And forgive me, I don't recall Weiss is the actor's name, but since the three of them and they're now in the game and they are supposed criminals going up against these stalkers who are like military guys that are badasses and Sub-Zero, you have a cool set piece here, right? But I would have liked to see a little bit more of a cat and mouse thing where it kind of starts off that way where Sub-Zero comes out of the shadows and he's attacking from different angles. They don't know where he's coming from. And then it's over. Schwarzenegger gets the better of him. He's the hero, of course, comes out on top and manages to rip off some cheesy one-liner.
Right.
He was a real pain in the neck. Amazing. And I would have liked to see a little bit more of the chase, kind of the, like I said, cat and mouse, but the hunt, the stalker really hunting them. And they're trying to, they have to develop strategy or tactics in order to get through a maze, possibly.
Yes.
And then move on to the next stage. But then they learn more about one another as teammates, possibly, or the villain, or what this game really means. And then there's something, you start developing layers as you go. But you're absolutely right. It maybe goes against what I was saying originally. Why I liked it is because it moves quickly, is that there could have definitely been more development within the game itself.
Yeah, but you could still do that and move it quickly. I just felt like you didn't really care about, not that you should care about the stalkers, but it would have made them more interesting if you understood more of what they were about or why they do. I don't know. You have to know why they do this, but.
Okay. Are you going to make this a fight movie or is it going to be more of a backstory type of film where there's a lot more development? Because it's okay to just have a fight movie, and we know that's what it's going to be. But there was so much, there was some cool, the setting, the concept had layers almost built into it that just never get discovered. You could peel back, like, who are these guys that got thrown out? Why are they in this position to be a stalker? What is their motivation? Anything. Like you say, we don't have to spend the whole movie giving them a full backstory. We don't need to know each and every one of their backgrounds. Like, what's Sub-Zero's background? What's Fireball's background? But give us something to make them maybe even a little bit multi-layered or sympathetic, or we empathize with them on some level, connect to them on any level. So the thing is then, fine, if you're going to go with a fight movie and it's just going to be fight after fight after fight, those fights better be fucking good.
Exactly. Right?
They better be damn good. And you've got Schwarzenegger. And this is another thing, looking back upon Schwarzenegger films, we with this perspective going, I am a big Schwarzenegger fan. I grew up with him generationally, all that stuff. Still love the guy. But he's not a martial artist. He's not the most acrobatic or dexterous, you know, type of fighter. He's brute strength and power. That's his thing. So the fights aren't as complicated. So the choreography can be quite simple. So if it's going to be a fight movie, which this turns out to be, the fights just kind of start and end and you're like, oh, okay, I guess we're moving on. That just happened.
Yeah. And I think what makes it worse is because the movie he did before this is Predator. Mm. And I mean, we don't really know that much about the Predator, but the Predator is freaking badass.
Yeah.
And what you know about him is cool. And you don't get that from any of these stalkers. You don't feel like they're cool. It's like, okay, one guy is on ice skates. Another guy has a flamethrower.
Right.
Shoots electricity. They're like one trick ponies. Whereas the Predator has all this cool tech. And the whole time you're trying to figure out.
And a lot of mystery.
A lot of mystery. Yeah. Whereas you don't get this mystery from these stalkers. And that's what just kind of makes
They're just thugs.
Yeah.
They're basically just thugs. Mm-hmm. We're led to think that they're more than that, but they don't give us any of it.
No. They need to somehow develop that to make it more interesting to see what they were going through, or even how, like, it was kind of cool how the audience picks who's going to go up next, but it would have been cool to see how they move the group into that arena. You saw a layout of the Running Man arena, and it was sectioned off like, all right, this is Sub-Zero arena. Okay, if the audience member picks Sub-Zero, we got to send them this way. So they go in there to fight. Just something like that would have been kind of neat, just to see how, kind of like you think of the horror movie Cabin in the Woods, how they picked that out and they had all the creatures. And that was kind of cool how they figured that out. It's like, okay, if they pick this up, then we got to trigger this creature.
Right.
Cool thing. The same thing in the Running Man, which I think they totally did not develop.
I agree. If I were to be a member of the audience watching this, I would like to see the rats in a maze. And if, like, you're looking on the screen and you're watching the show unfold live and you're watching these characters and these stories play out, I'd like to see, the layout of the actual grounds, like the game itself. If there was a maze and there's different levels and there's things within these levels that they have to get through, obstacles they have to overcome in order to get to the next level where they're going to fight the next boss, right? And then get to the next level. And there's all these stakes. And then, of course, you've got people placing bets on the outside all the time. Yeah. There's things to bet on left and right, which is, adds to the fun of it, even though it's somewhat sadistic, but it makes for entertainment. So, but they didn't take advantage of what I think was all just laid right there, laid out in front of them. But anyway.
All right. Do we move on to favorite scenes?
Absolutely.
Why don't you go first on favorite scenes?
Sure. So I have none. How about you, Bill?
There we go.
Just kidding. This is one of those situations where it's funny enough here. We're going to go right back to that point, how things move so quickly, where I was like, oh, that seems okay. But it just kind of went by and it was over. And then, okay, that's not really a scene that stands out for me. But what I'll go with right now is actually where I found some enjoyment. It was right off the bat with the opening detention center riot. Because of the fact that it just contains some great all around 80s shit. I mean, you've got great 80s violence. First of all, so this is called in the beginning. Okay, for the audience listening, Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a character named Ben Richards, who is a police helicopter pilot who's been wrongly accused of a mass slaughter of this crime. And he's been sentenced to this detention center, which is now, this is a dystopian future, which takes place in 2019. And the detention center is called the Wilshire Detention Zone. So this is supposed to take place in a dystopian Los Angeles. And it was funny because I see the Wilshire Detention Zone and it looks like the whole thing is like in, shambles and under construction. And it's just, and I'm like, oh, so this is accurate.
Yes.
This is what Wilshire, that's what it looks like today, where it's just construction and crap all over the place. And I fucking hate driving around that area. Sorry, no disrespect to the people living in the Wilshire district. It has its upside. But anyway, so great 80s shit in it. So it's at the detention center. You've got a head explosion.
Yes.
You've got awesome. Arnold just doing his thing where he's doing the I can hold a machine gun with one hand.
Yes.
He does it like two or three times.
And turns and shoots accurately with it too.
Oh, absolutely. Great one-liner where he grabs one of the detention guards like by the belt and lifts him up over his head and says, need a lift, and throws him over the railing. There's just some great 80s shit in this scene. This is my favorite. So they purposefully start this riot to stir things up, to distract the guards, because one of the prisoners is going to take the computer and disable the security system so they can escape without their heads blowing off, because they're all wearing these basically, what are they called?
Explosive collars. Yeah.
Thank you. So they have to disable the collars, and there's a code that they got to put in, and et cetera. In order to incite the riot, Schwarzenegger throws a punch at Yaphet Kotto, and he misses by a mile. Mm-hmm. And you hear the sound effect and everything, but it's a great ghost punch where he just, if you pause it, if you look at it, he doesn't even come close. I was like, wow, they just went with that take. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, even though it's a fake fight, they're just starting a fight to start shit in the prison. He still, as an actor, swinging a punch at somebody, like he misses him by a mile. It's just really funny. So how about you? You got any scenes? I've got a few others. I just was starting with that one.
I just love also in that scene with the code on the computer where the digits for the code had to be as big as, like on the eye chart, it's the top row. It's the E. It's got to be that big so everyone and their brother can see it.
Here's another issue with security. In security guards in 80s movies, Bill Bann, what's up?
I don't know.
The guy's sitting right in the middle of the grounds where people, like prisoners are walking around left and right. He's right out and he's just got his little laptop wide open with a code that a blind person could read.
Yes.
You know, it's just the letters are.
Yeah. It's only what? Six digits.
Oh yeah. It's not too difficult to memorize that one.
No.
We'll get into code. I'm developing, or at least recognizing, that I've developed some sort of anxiety issues with some of these. What was the one I brought up in the last podcast? What was I getting? Throw their papers, toss papers off of a desk, when they just swipe everything off the top of the desk and throw it on the ground, or anybody drops a pile of papers, I'd lose my mind. Well, in this one, it's if they ever show a code on a screen, I feel like I need to memorize it.
Right.
Me as the viewer. Like I gotta know it. I gotta know this code, because it's going to come up later and I'm going to have to punch it in, and I've got to do it by memory. So what is it? And thankfully, it was very easy in this movie.
Well, I mean, the code for the uplink was at least a little bit more difficult.
I wrote it down, Bill. I've got it.
Do you really? Yeah. That's awesome. I remember there was being a 1717. That's about it.
On the uplink 1717-4.
Okay.
61B. But it just drives me nuts sometimes, but it is a good device to create some sort of tension where a character does have to remember the code because so much rides on it. You know, the stakes are at. Anyway.
But they definitely needed a better system of turning on and turning off the security gate. That was just ridiculous. Come on, it's 2019. We should know better than that back then. All right, this is one of my favorite scenes. And I know you've been busting on Jesse Ventura in this. But I only like the concept of what they did was the final fight between Captain Freedom and Ben Richards.
I agree.
Like, the fight is not that great, but the fact that they use that scene to manipulate the audience into thinking Ben Richards died,
right,
I thought was pretty cool. But then my next thing was, well, he's not dead. So what happens if he does show up? But I just thought the whole thing of, because especially nowadays, because we do have that technology where we can kind of do that stuff. In that sense, I thought it was cool too. It was like, oh yeah, this is one of the few moments of the film where like, oh, they're actually on the mark about what they could do with technology
100%
in the future.
So that's it was ahead of its time in that way. They predicted it.
Yeah.
That was some smart sci-fi.
Yes.
For sure. I agree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching this again, too, I will acquiesce a bit here on the, you know, take it easy on Jesse the Body. He does get his moment to shine in that particular scene, even though technically he's not fighting Schwarzenegger. You're meant to believe he is. The audience in the theater is meant to believe that he is. So he does get his moment in the spotlight and show, you know, he's in the ring. He's doing kind of his wrestler thing. So he gets to kind of, he gets his fight. He does. It's just,
I wish they played it up a little bit more. Yeah. They should have played up his wrestling background a little more.
Well, the problem is that they're cutting to Jesse Ventura the entire movie as if he's just waiting for his moment. Mm-hmm. To either get out there. And then for some reason at the end, he says he's not going to fight at all. And because of the ridiculous getup they want him to wear, which is understandable, but then you were hoping for more from the fight. That's all. Mm-hmm. Because it's Jesse that's, you know, and it's funny that they were both in Predator as well.
Exactly.
You got Jesse the Body and Schwarzenegger in back-to-back movies in the same year.
Yeah. And we better mention this because I know everyone else talks about it. Future governors. Okay, so we said it. We said it, everyone. We know that there were future governors. Okay, moving on. Favorite scene. Jason, what else do you have?
All right. I have to say, when Ben Richards first comes to the Running Man show, the first Running Man show is great. The buildup, the excitement. I love the pomp and circumstance. You got the dancers going. You got people getting way too excited about this show. I thought it was cool. I thought the buildup was great for the first show. So everything leading up to and including the rocket sleds going down the tunnels was, I thought, pretty cool. I thought if this is, I'm putting this as a scene, is the entire Running Man setup, if that makes sense.
No, that's good too.
The lead up was great.
You know, what part was just so uncomfortable for me to watch was when Damon Killian, who's Richard Dawson, says, mm-hmm. we have a surprise for you. We brought two of your friends.
Right.
So Yaphet Kotto and Marvin McIntyre, Weiss and Lachlan.
Yep.
And they're in the sleds. And you can tell by looking, I'm like, oh my God, I would have hated being on set filming that day because my neck must have been hurting so bad just looking at them, trying to strain and look up the way they were.
Oh, it looked brutal. That looked so uncomfortable.
I would have been just like, just shoot me down the sled. Just shoot me down the sled. I don't want to sit like this. That was just ridiculous. I felt bad for them. I'm like, oh my God, you're going into a lot worse, but that right there must have sucked being up like that. I'm like, why do they have them straight down like that? At least you got the main chute where you go down the middle.
So for our listeners, the Running Man show, when they're broadcasting live from the studio, you have your in-studio audience. They're going nuts. You've got Richard Dawson, who plays Damon Killian, who's out there doing his announcing. And Richard Dawson is killing it. He's just working the audience. And then he goes to the screens and he says, we've got a great contestant tonight. It's Ben Richards, the Butcher of Bakersfield. And they watch this doctored footage of Schwarzenegger as Ben Richards slaughtering all these people. And Schwarzenegger comes out in his bright yellow unitard. And here's the thing that Bill's talking about here is that the main, like, kind of central part of this whole set piece in studio is the chute. It's this tunnel. And it's the very beginning. This is how the contestants actually enter the game, because the game mainly takes place in these down and out sections of L.A., so they have to get there somehow. So the contestants are strapped into these, like into a rocket sled that runs down the chute, and it's in the middle of the studio. So there's one that's going down. But the reveal here, and this is again, yeah, like Bill said, it's like one of the reasons why this is one of my favorite scenes, is that he's not going into this himself. He was led to think that if he was the contestant on the show, two of his buddies that escaped jail as well would not have to be on the show. As it turns out, they actually are. They're going to be joining him. So we get to see Schwarzenegger strapped into the rocket sled going down the main chute. But the other two guys, as Bill was saying, they're strapped into their rocket sleds in a vertical position. They're not sitting on the ground, just kind of going horizontal down the tube. They're literally strapped into these things. And I hate to say it, but it's almost, they look like they're almost like crucified to these sleds. Yeah. And It looks extremely uncomfortable. Yaphet Kotto's sweating bullets.
Oh yeah.
It works though. It builds tension, and they start, and then they go down, they go straight down into the tubes. I don't know if that helps the listeners out there kind of visualize it. You need to see that. So I thought everything kind of building up the Running Man show.
Oh yeah.
The spectacle of it was was well done. Like I felt like I was there. I was like, yeah, all right, let's get this show going. I want to be there. I'd like to be there in studio as part of the audience. And they're all dancing, and all the hot girls are dancing, out on doing their thing. And Dawson is playing it all up. It's like, this is big time.
Yeah. And just even the shots of the people in Los Angeles, just outside going to the betting pods or whatever you want to call it,
right,
to get ready for this game too. And watching them on their big screens, which I'll get into the TVs later. All right. Do you have any other favorite scenes?
I'm just going to give one more shout out to our man, Yaphet Kotto. His death scene was pretty good. And that was my opening quote for tonight's pod, is that he gets to say, I don't want to be the only asshole in heaven, Ben. There's some cool lighting in that scene, actually. It has like this deep blue. They use like a deep, like the dark blue gel or something. And everybody looks really cool in that scene. So it was kind of a well-lit scene. So I thought Yaphet Kotto got a good death scene in this.
So let's move on. I know you touched on those a little bit on the soundtrack.
Right.
Of course, was by Harold Faltermeyer, who did some great 80s soundtracks, Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, and another favorite of mine is Fletch.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I guess we're disagreeing on this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was so excited when I saw his name in the credits. I'm like, oh, cool. And I was like, why do I not remember the music from this movie? And I literally had to keep telling myself, like, oh, listen for the music. For me, like, when you think of those other three movies, the music is almost like another character, or it's an enhancement of the character.
Sure.
Whereas for this one, it kept getting lost for me. Like, I kept forgetting that there was music in it. Maybe if I'd listened to it separately, I might like it. But for the film itself, I was kind of on it, to be honest. It just didn't
go
for me. I didn't have a cassette at home to listen to or play for Jeff Colony, so I don't know.
Look, Bill, you're entitled to your opinion. You're wrong, but you're still entitled to your opinion. Okay. I'm just kidding. I totally understand. You know, when you think about Beverly Hills Cop, the theme is Axel F, right? Dun, dun, yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Everybody knows it. It's literally named after the character, Axel Foley. So it's associated with him. It's extremely identifiable. It's iconic. You go to Top Gun. It's literally an anthem.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so inspirational. It heightens the entire experience. You cannot help but get pumped up. It's, again, supremely iconic. So it's a tough follow-up, right? I still think this soundtrack sets the tone. And the theme, I appreciate. Not all of it is gold, but it's effective for me. So speaking of the music, and technically it is part of the official soundtrack, of course, the main theme of the film is called Restless Heart, Running Away With You, which is written by the one and only John Parr, performed by John Parr. It's at the end credits. It's one of those great 80s theme songs. And of course, John Parr, probably most famous for the theme from St. Elmo's Fire, Man in Motion, which is the most iconic. I even was listening to this song during the end credits, and I was fist pumping, lip syncing. I'm like, oh yeah, this is, again, so bad it's good. He's got a very identifiable 80s theme song, movie theme song voice, that John Parr. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that his song, John Parr's song, Naughty Naughty, was used in the Miami Vice episode, Florence, Italy. John Parr, big in the 80s.
Yeah, I think I was surprised too, because I'm listening to that song at the end. I'm like, oh, typical 80s. And then I was like, oh, who sings this? And I did one of those, what? John Parr? Holy crap. I don't think I've ever heard of this song outside of this movie. So let's move on. So we're going to move on to our Swiss cheese / complaint department.
Yes.
We call it Swiss cheese because...
because although this movie is delicious, it does have holes.
Right. So if it doesn't fall in Swiss cheese, it is a complaint. What do you have for the Swiss cheese complaint department, Jason?
All right. Well, I'm gonna put this in the Swiss cheese segment. Now, in the film, Ben Richards has been jailed for a crime he doesn't commit. And he meets two of his cohorts in jail. The three of them escape. They go their separate ways. Ben Richards is supposedly trying to find his brother and get out of town, and ends up in the apartment of Maria Conchita Alonso. And basically, he's basically out. He's about to escape. And meanwhile, we understand that there's this huge show going on, this reality competition show called The Running Man, hosted by Damon Killian. And Damon Killian is looking for a worthy contestant, and he's trying to find the next big contestant for the show because he's got to get his ratings up. And in another, he's like behind the scenes at the studio, and he's in the offices. And in another room, he catches on one of the screens, video footage of Ben Richards' escape from the detention center.
So you started talking about it. I didn't think about it until you started saying it. Yeah.
And it's all like in slow motion from multiple angles, just making Schwarzenegger look like a complete stud. And that's when Killian goes, "There he is. That's the guy. This guy just broke out of jail. Look at those muscles. Look at those biceps. He's a star." I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he's saying. And I'm going, what kind of footage? What is he watching? Wait, where? How did he get this footage? That would never happen. First of all, how often do you ever see like footage of one person, like during a prison break, in slow motion from multiple angles and close-ups? And it's hilarious to me because I was like, that's absolutely fucking ridiculous. You get it. I mean, they make their point, but it's just completely unrealistic. Like, that's how he finds out. He's like, okay, we got to find this guy. And then on top of it is like, what was his plan? Because Ben Richards had escaped. He's out. I guess his plan was to call the Justice Department or somebody, who the producers of the show, and be like, we just have to track him down.
Yeah. It's like,
because they got lucky.
Yes.
Ben Richards ends up taking Maria Conchita Alonso, a.k.a. Amber Mendez, to the airport. She punches him in the nuts and he gets captured. That's because the airport security nabs him. That's how he gets caught and then ends up on the show. But if that hadn't happened, Damon Killian would be shit out of luck, because Killian's like, yeah, we're going to get him to be on the show. And I'm like, how are you going to get him? He escaped. He's out in the world. Like, as a game show host, what was his plan? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. He actually got caught by airport security.
Right.
That's pretty lame. You can't let yourself get caught by airport security. Come on, man.
Here's a tip. This is what I think we've learned. I think this has happened in a few different films. If airport security is onto you and you're on the run from the law, don't go running on the tarmac. Yes. Not a good idea.
No.
You're out in the wide open.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to give tips. I'm not saying it's a good idea to evade airport security, especially in this day and age. Please be safe, everyone. Abide by the law. But not a good idea by Ben Richards.
I kept saying,
run out in the open like that.
When he's running and he sees what they're going to catch him with, I just kept saying, stop and duck, and just go off in another direction. Just go off in another direction. By the time the car pulls around, maybe you can hide somewhere. But yeah, the fact that he got caught by airport security, come on, man. You can't do that. All right, so I got something for the complaint department.
Yeah.
Jason, what was the purpose of the prep scene for Ben Richards before he goes onto the show?
Oh, great call, Bill. Hey, that was the scene where I actually really liked the music. I did. It was just this cool synth, like cool music in the background where he's on like the table when he's in the, like the laboratory, you mean?
Yeah. Cause I was kind of like, what are they putting, like tracking technology in him?
That's so what I forgot. I was like, is this how they're going to locate him throughout when he's in the arena, basically when he's on the show?
Right.
And he's like, running around.
All they do is
there's never a callback to that.
Uncomfortable needles. And then what was hilarious too is because they put the needle in his arm and you see he's got that big gash on his arm. And then the guy gets that huge Band-Aid and slaps it on the needle. I'm like, why don't you put that on his arm where he's got the big cut?
Right.
Dead. I don't think he needs it for that little needle. And then he just goes in the room and they set the gas and knock him out. And I was like, is that going to come into play later? And it doesn't. I didn't get that at all.
I was really confused too. I had forgotten about that sequence. Mm-hmm. And I was watching going, okay, this is kind of cool. And then they never call back to it at all. There's no use for that whatsoever.
No.
There was a couple things in this film where I was like, there must have been something that was cut out or was in the original script that they just forgot to go back to or something or delve deeper into. So I don't know. That's a really good call though. Going back to the footage that we're watching, when characters within the movie are watching things on screens, I talked about Damon Killian watching Ben Richards' prison escape.
Correct.
You just would never see footage like that. There's nothing realistic about it whatsoever. Then we come to the actual Running Man show, and he's previewing his show. He's saying, we've got a great contestant for you tonight. It's Ben Richards, the Butcher of Bakersfield. And they show the footage from, it's doctored footage, it's edited footage, but it's footage of Ben Richards as the police helicopter pilot committing this atrocity and massacring these people during a food riot. And the footage is footage from the movie. The movie you and I are watching.
Yes.
That they're putting on the screen. They're like close-ups of Schwarzenegger and exterior shots of the helicopter and then close-ups of the people in the other people. Like, it's like there's no, it's not like security cam footage from within the helicopter or CCTV type thing. Like, it's not video, it's actual movie footage.
Like, exactly.
I'm like, how did they get hold of the movie that they're in?
Yeah. Well, you know,
it doesn't make sense. Like, that's what you know what I'm saying. I understand suspension of disbelief here. There's just no way. It just doesn't make sense. It takes you out of it, or took me out of it. Also, we touched upon this earlier. I'm just jumping to another issue I had was definitely this is for just the, I have a lot of other issues, but for the Swiss cheese segment, this is just a big hole. Okay. Is a major hole is definitely Amber Mendez becoming a resistance fighter at the end. Yeah. That's a what the fuck moment. That's a huge hole. Like, what the fuck is going on right now? Because it made absolutely no sense. She's cowering half the movie. She's freaking out, losing her shit because she doesn't belong in the game. By the way, she ends up in the actual Running Man show because she had undercovered the fact that they had doctored the footage to basically frame Ben Richards for this crime that he didn't commit. And they bust her and they throw her into the show with him and the other guys. And it makes little sense. And then even less sense at the end, because she turns into, like, literally within 30 seconds, she puts on like camo and a vest and is carrying an automatic weapon.
Right. Because even the scene where she gets caught and she finds the footage and the guy taps her and then like she has that shit her pants moment. And I'm like, you could have just played that off. Just like, oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah, I'm just going through records or looking for something.
Instead, she's like, oh my God, I've been caught.
Right.
You know, it's like, way to go, idiot.
That would have been great if she actually lifted her hands and they were red.
Like, yeah,
she literally was caught red-handed.
She might as well have at that point. Just act like you're supposed to be in there and you would have been fine.
And then you wouldn't end up in the show and then you wouldn't have to become a resistance fighter in 30 seconds.
Right. And then all of a sudden, Ben Richards' love interest too.
Yeah. And then making out with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. At the end. That like, makes so much sense too.
What's happening right now?
Yeah.
The whole ending, Bill, this is where this is Swiss cheese all over the goddamn place, because the ending really falls apart. The worst part of the movie is when the resistance comes into the studio and they decide to have a firefight just in the middle of the crowd. They're going to shoot all the security guys. They're just, Innocent bystanders are getting shot left and right. There's a gratuitous shot. This poor woman is running away from one of the security guys, and she gets riddled with bullets from behind. Mm-hmm. And you're like, "What? What is going on here? Why are we showing this?" So, not a good place to start a fight is in the middle of a studio audience. Yeah, so that doesn't hold up at all. All that being said, though, John Parr's theme song comes in and makes it all okay. So I'm fine with all of it.
Oh, okay. So I got something else for Swiss cheese. Is in the beginning of the episode they show the three runners that actually made it through.
Oh yeah.
And then in the course of the show, Amber finds the three bodies just in the middle of the arena.
Oh, yeah. It's a locker room, I believe.
Yeah, a locker room.
In a basement somewhere.
And I'm like, wait. Okay. It's kind of cool that we do find out that it's all a lie and that they're actually dead. But I'm like,
they're not on Maui.
Yeah.
Wherever they were supposed to be.
Why would you leave the bodies there? This is the one that you couldn't dispose the bodies. And it's the one room in the whole place that doesn't have a camera, because you almost have to see it because Fireball comes in there. So we know what's kind of happening. So wouldn't the audience absolutely see there's three bodies in there too? Just, with Fireball? Right.
Three rotting corpses in a locker room.
Yeah. Don't at that point you just turn to the camera and say, I found blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The good point, because she would be on camera. Because obviously, like you said, if Fireball is there, then the cameras are there because the audience is watching everything happen live and there's literally cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And every nook and cranny of this game arena / broken down section of LA.
So if the bodies are in the middle of the arena, okay, even if there's no cameras there, I come across the bodies.
Oh, it's a great call. Yeah.
Yeah. I just go out to the camera and say, hey, look, just drag them out.
I just found the three guys that were supposedly the winners last season and are basking in the sun on Maui.
Yeah.
No, their corpses are right here. You can see them.
It's amazing they all had dog tags.
Good call. Yeah.
Anything else for Swiss cheese or complaint department?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got tons for the complaints, but that was just my Swiss cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Bill, let's start at the very, very beginning. It's always a good place to start.
Okay.
An absolutely terrible title card.
Oh, God.
Oh, what the hell? The shitty arcade graphics? Bill, I had an Apple IIe computer growing up.
What would have done better? Yes.
Did you ever play or hear of the game Load Runner?
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
Look at it. Watch it on YouTube. It's hilarious. I used to spend many an evening in my teen, playing that game on the Apple IIe. The little character is a little white guy that runs around. That's the running character. Like during the title card, when the running man shows up on the screen, you see like a white guy's running.
Right, yeah.
That's Load Runner. And I'm like, this is an Apple IIe video game title sequence. And then the running man title comes on the screen. I'm like, is this what we call the Robotron font? Is that what they're using here?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Even the title crawl to explain what was going on.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. That was the Robotron font.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the Robotron. If you just look up anybody at home, the Robotron video game was amazing growing up. The arcade game was great. And they renamed it Robotron 2084. And it's awesome.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun. But that font is unmistakable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that scroll or that crawl in the beginning looked like. Hey, Bill.
Yes.
Do you like to work out in lingerie?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I guess that's not really an issue. Then I can't really make
it. I just laughed. I was like, oh, there's still Bowflexes in 2019. I didn't know the Bowflex would still be around. Cracked me up more was the fact that she had a Bowflex.
She's wearing her lingerie and nylons sitting on the weight bench like portion of a Bowflex doing sit-ups and watching the news. And it's amazing. I'm like, who the hell does this? And to me, it's clearly like a porn scene setup, because then Schwarzenegger shows up. It's like, oh, you just happen to be here working out in your lingerie. And here I am. I'm all clean. I just got out of the shower and I'm wearing my boxers and nothing else but this really tight t-shirt. It's like you just hear the music. It's like Harold Faltermeyer should have just kicked in with a bow, 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 you know, and it's like, come on, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember that's why I wrote down here. I knew it even when I was a kid. I knew it. I was like, are these two going to do it?
I love how when we talk about porn scenes, it's always the bow chicka bow bow. I'm like, when did that become the international notes for porn? I'm like, what movie is that actually from a porn movie? I actually want to know. I actually do. Because everybody does bow chicka bow bow.
Yeah, that's the go-to.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, what movie is that from? Is that from something, I don't know, Debbie Does Dallas? I don't know. I wouldn't know.
That we should track it down.
Yeah. And if it's an 80s movie, we'll have to do a podcast on it.
Any viewers out there, if you can locate the origination of the Bow and Chicka Bow Wow.
Yes, please let us know.
Hey, Bill, here's another issue I have. It's actually, I think it was in that same scene or led right up to that scene. Captain Freedom's workout. Holy shit balls. What the fuck is Jesse wearing? What's he wearing?
I don't know.
A little too much room in the crotch, my friend. Yeah. With those stretchy pants. And I'm thinking, well, good for you, Jesse. Maybe you needed the extra room. But it looks fucking ridiculous. It's like got these high, like hot pink Lycra. I'm moving on. Anyway.
And I guess, yeah, just talking about, because we talked about this earlier, I guess 80s hair made a comeback back in 2019. I must have missed that. I was just like, come on.
Right.
Give me some futuristic hairstyles.
As do cassette tapes.
Yes.
They make a comeback.
And they even talk about video cassettes too. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, not a lot of futuristic technology. Not well. I mean, Schwarzenegger does plan a trip to Honolulu, I think, via hitting the same key on a keyboard 10 times.
Yes, exactly. Tab. I must have been tab.
Going to Honolulu. And now we're going to, well, just booked our flight. Hey, Arnold, hit like two or three different keys. Just try to make it look like, you know, like Jesus. The rocket sleds going down the chutes are awesome, but yes. Jesus Christ, give our boys some headgear or some extra protection, because they're flying out of these things at 1,000 miles an hour going into some haphazard fucking nylon netting, and you're going to have a broken neck, a broken back, a broken spine, sternum, you name it, you're dead when you're coming out of that fucking cement tunnel, whatever it is. And why would you even, if you're running this game show, your precious commodities are the contestants. Why put them at risk? They're going to die before they even get into the arena.
I know. I mean, even crash test dummies don't snap their necks as bad as these things were coming out of that tunnel. I was like,
I had a
show over.
I had a little Mandela effect, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
I use that now. I think about it all the time because of you from the Risky Business podcast, because I thought that somebody actually did die upon entering the arena, one of the contestants, but they didn't. I thought I thought he died. Like you see, like for some reason, I thought you saw him like with a bloody nose as if he had brain trauma or broke his neck or something, but that didn't happen. He's just like, all shooken up. Moving on, 18, 24, 61, B, 17, 17, 4. That's the uplink code.
Awesome.
God damn it. I was like, I got to remember this or else the resistance isn't going to be able to, get into the feed and they won't be able to, broadcast the truth. Okay. Here's my last issue. Fucking Dynamo sucks. Oh my God. Oh my God. He is one giant light, bright magic screen. Do you remember the light bright?
Oh yeah.
What the they couldn't come up with anything better. He drives a fucking Lego moon rover with shitty wheels all over the place. The only kind of cool part is when he actually breaks character, because Schwarzenegger, he tries to drive up a rocky mountain or a rocky like hillside and flips over. Yeah. And then he's like, oh my God, please don't kill me. So because he breaks out of the Dynamo character, it's like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. Like you get to see him freaking out because he's like, this is just a show, cut to commercial.
Yeah.
I actually like that moment, but Dynamo is a bitch and he goes down like a bitch twice in this movie. Why does he even exist in this film?
He's a good singer though.
And the actor actually did sing opera. That's actually him singing. Yeah. So kudos to the actor for putting on the light bright suit and actually putting up with all that. So kudos to him. It wasn't his fault.
All right, so I'll just do one last complaint before we move on, so we're not on this segment forever. Anytime they showed a TV or TV footage, I was like, that was some of the crappiest looking TV footage, even for the shows. All the TVs are square, and even the footage looks like it looks like when you're watching old like sports reels, and it's everything's all blurry. I'm like, come on!
Oh, sure.
It's 2019,
right?
I mean, we have HD now, 4K and all that. I was like, this should be like super sharp, gorgeous, big, huge screen televisions. We're not looking through squares anymore. Even when they were out betting at the betting site, had a better television than Amber had in her house or in any of the other house, any other place you just saw. That just drove me nuts. Or when they showed the footage of that other game with the guy
climbing for dollars.
Yeah, climbing for dollars. And you look at the footage, I'm like, this looks like this was a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy on a VHS cassette that you gave to your friend to borrow, and you could barely see what was going on.
Yeah, it's like you want to just hit the tracking button to get the blurry lines out.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man. It's terrible footage.
It really makes you appreciate Blade Runner all the more, doesn't it? When you think about a dystopian society in, when did Blade Runner come out? 82?
Yeah.
This is 87.
Exactly. Because that was a cool map painting they had of Los Angeles.
I agree. That was cool. The buildings look great.
Yeah. But the first thing I thought was, oh my God, this is years after Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And their Los Angeles looks 100 times better than this does.
Oh, yeah. But you made me think of that with just talking about like TV screens. Because in Blade Runner, you have all kinds of stuff going on with screens and the visuals, advertisements on sides of buildings. It's like, oh, yeah, that plays. That could be the future. But not VHS recordings from 5 years ago that was, you know, you'd left in the basement. That's the way these look in this movie.
I get it.
That's great. You have every right to file that issue with the complaints department.
Yep. All right. So let's move on, because we could probably do another 40 minutes on complaints of Swiss cheese. So let's move on to our next segment. It's, hey, it's that actor.
All right.
In this segment, we spotlight a character actor you have seen in many other films, an actor making their big screen debut, or an actor that makes an uncredited cameo. So, Jason, who's your, hey, it's that actor?
Well, all right, Bill. Well, this actor portrayed the character credited as Agent. He was Ben Richards' theatrical agent in this film. The actor's name, Kenneth Lerner, a.k.a. Ken Lerner, who also goes on to be in RoboCop 2, Exorcist 3, well known for his role as Principal Bob Flutie in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He was on Days of Our Lives for a bit. He's actually in a new crime drama right now called Gravesend. I don't know if it's out yet, but that's his latest credit on IMDb. But I have a very personal connection to Ken Lerner, as he was my acting instructor for years, for more than 4 years. But gosh, just a great mentor, a great guide, a wonderful acting instructor, an extremely talented guy, very knowledgeable guy. He was just a wonderful guide. A really great guide, and he's still doing it. He's still teaching and obviously still acting, prolific actor. And he's always been near and dear to my heart. Unfortunately, I lost a little bit of touch with him, and that's due to my laziness. But I do have other friends that are in touch with him, and he's doing well. So shout out to Ken, to my guy, Ken Lerner.
Awesome, Jason. When I forgot he was in this movie, and when I saw him, I literally pointed at the screen because I'm like, there's Jason's that actor. I knew you were going to put it.
I have, of course.
I love
no brainer
this podcast. You have not disappointed, Jason. Most of the time, I kind of predict who you're going to point out. And I was like, oh, if he does not do Ken Lerner, I'm not going to be a happy person.
Oh, yeah, of course. He took me to a whole nother level as far as my acting ability. I mean, I give him all the credit in the world. Just a great, great mentor.
Yeah, and he does have a fun scene. The way he goes out was kind of cool too. I thought that was good too. The whole pen in the back thing. I thought that was kind of clever.
Great expression on his face when he turns around and then he runs off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's one of these like, yep, here we go again. I've done this like 200 times, and just go through the spiel, blah 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 blah, and. Just the fact, how many times has he probably turned his back to a runner? And there you go.
Sure.
The one time he got burned.
It's funny. And I should mention also, he had a recurring role on The Goldbergs.
Oh, okay.
So Ken Lerner's a familiar face. You'd know him if you saw.
Gotcha. So my Hey, It's That Actor, it's a female, and she was listed in the credits as the propaganda officer. When right before the show's about to start, and her big line in this movie, and it's exactly at the 30-minute mark of the film, so you can go back and check this out. Her big line in the movie is "Big crowd tonight," and the propaganda officer was played by Lynn Shea. Now, Lynn Shea, if you do not know, She has appeared in a ton of the Farley brother movies. She was in Dumb and Dumber, Kingpin, then there's Something About Mary. And the first time I ever remember her was from Kingpin, because she was the landlady.
Of course.
That would...
She's awesome.
Yes.
And now I know exactly who you're talking about. Of course. I knew the name when you said it, and I was like, why don't... And that, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so she was Woody Harrelson's landlady.
Yeah, in Kingpin
right? Who, yeah, sexual favors in order for him to pay the rent. And she was just nasty and Something About Mary. She was hilarious. So as Cameron Diaz's neighborhood.
When she's all tan and leathery.
Exactly.
She's, yeah.
And what's crazy is she's been acting since the 70s in a lot of bit parts. And I was looking through her 80s credits. And Jason, this is some of her credits. I'm not going to say what the movies were, but just... what her title character
oh was. Awesome
credits. Receptionist at Haven, nurse with telegram, woman on beach, teacher, journalist at rally, employment office girl. So her career did not take off until she was really in her 50s, because we see her all the time now because she was one of the main characters in the Insidious franchises.
Okay,
she plays Elise Rainier. So it's so crazy that this is one of the few times where an actress's career actually takes off later in her life, where, you know, when you hear a lot of stories about Hollywood actresses, it's like once they hit 35, they're done, because then they're just deemed too old and that's it. Whereas Lynn, his career is actually take off after that point.
Right.
Like the latter half of her years, she's in a ton of stuff. I see her all the time. So it's just amazing to see.
Oh, and she's great.
Because I really had to go back and like, wait, she's in this? What the hell else?
I didn't catch it. I completely missed it.
Oh, yeah. She's in it for like 4 seconds, and she's literally at the 30-minute mark. So okay. Go to the 30-minute mark. She says her line, and that's the last time you see her in this film.
She's great. She's always great.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, now she does a ton of the horror films with James Wan. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and she's
well done. Yeah,
yeah. So she had a second career. So it was
good for cool. her. And yeah, she's deserving.
Yeah.
So I also wanted to give a quick shout out to Sven.
Oh yes,
Sven Thorsen.
Yes,
who is like our Al Leong of yes. 80s movies as well. Like he's right there. I mean, he's in all these 80s movies because he's like 6'10". Not really, but he's like at least 6'5". I would imagine. Oh no, I think his, excuse me, 6'4.5" is his height, I believe, according to IMDb. And he's always like a heavy or the security guard or military guy. And he's just a big or a thug, you know, type. And in this film, Sven plays a character named Sven. And so he's Damon Killian's right hand man. Like he's his personal security guard.
Yeah,
and he's in all kinds of 80s movies. So, and then also a shout out to Professor Toro Tanaka, who plays Sub-Zero.
Yes,
that, he's a wrestler. His name was so when he's introduced in The Running Man as Sub-Zero, they don't just say Sub-Zero; they call him Professor Sub-Zero.
Yeah,
and that's a nod to his wrestling name.
Mm-hmm.
He's known as the Professor. Yeah,
yeah. So definitely have some cool. Hey, it's that actor.
Oh yeah,
this
yeah.
movie. All right, so let's move on to facts and trivia. So some facts and trivia for The Running Man. I'll go first on this one. So as we mentioned earlier, the director of this movie was Paul Michael Glazer. And I know we've been doing a bitch fest tearing this film apart. But
a bitch fest about characters going down like bitches.
Exactly. So Paul Michael Glazer was actually originally offered to direct this film. A while back, but he refused because he didn't feel like he had enough time to prep for the film. So they went through a couple other directors, and eventually Andrew Davis of The Fugitive fame was the original director who started shooting footage for this film, but he was fired 2 weeks into filming. And Rob Cohen, who was the producer of the film, who knew Paul from Miami Vice, asked Paul to come back in to try to finish this film. And Paul was like, okay, I'll do it. He's like, how much time can I stop production to prep? They gave him a weekend.
Yep.
A weekend to do this. So he had a weekend to close down the film, work on it. He asked, so supposedly Andrew Davis shot some of the early prison break-in stuff. And Paul asks, he's like, can I reshoot everything? Because, you know, you're only a week in. And they're like, no, you have to keep that footage. So he had to figure out how to shoot around what Andrew Davis had. So he had, so basically you're mixing styles in that beginning of what Paul does and Andrew. So some of that footage in the beginning is stuff that Andrew Davis shot for the prison scene, along with what Paul Michael Glaser did.
It's fascinating how it all works behind the scenes.
Yes.
Christopher Reeve was once attached to play the role of Ben Richards. Also rumored to be in the running were Dolph Lundgren and Patrick Swayze. Of course, Sylvester Stallone had the role, but decided he didn't want to do it, so he gave it to Schwarzenegger. That's all bullshit. I just made that up. But according to the internet, where everything is true, you know, we know that Sylvester Stallone was up for every leading role in every movie of all time. Our girl Paula Abdul.
Yeah.
Once again, coming through as a choreographer.
So it's the second movie we've had
Paula. After, Can't Buy Me Love, right?
Yep.
So in this, she choreographed the pre-show dance sequences. And she was friends with a lot of the female dancers were Laker girls, a lot of her friends. Little background on Richard Dawson as the host of Family Feud. We know that Richard Dawson, of course, who plays Damon Killian, was the famed Family Feud host. I, Bill, grew up on that show. I love Family Feud. I thought Dawson was a great host. And one of his trademarks was, of course, kissing all the women on the show, which he ended up catching a lot of flack for. He was actually given the nickname the Kissing Bandit. And television executives repeatedly tried to get him to stop. And this is all directly from IMDb. But I guess after criticism for doing that, he'd asked the viewers to write in and vote. The male response resulted in about 200,000 responses, the wide majority of whom were in favor of the kissing. On the 1985 finale, Dawson explained that he kissed contestants for love and luck, something his mother did with Dawson himself as a child. And he's great in this, man. You'd mentioned Rob Cohen being a producer.
Yes.
When he purchased the rights to the Richard Bachman novella, The Running Man, he had no idea that Richard Bachman was actually a pseudonym for Stephen King.
Yeah.
He didn't even know.
I don't even know if that was out.
If it had come out yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually an interesting story I found online about a year ago about the person who figured out that Bachman was King and kind of outed him. If you could look that up online and check it out, it's pretty neat. But yeah, since we're talking about the book, of course, you know, we do mention this is based on the book by Stephen King called The Running Man. And there is definitely a lot of differences between the novel and the movie. So in the novel, Ben Richards volunteers to be on the show because his daughter is ill and needs medical attention, and he's broke and he has no money. And this is the only way he's going to be able to make money to take care of her. The show is not a 3-hour show. It is like a 30-day show, and you get paid by the hour. So every hour you survive on the show, you get $100. And it takes place throughout the entire United States instead of this arena. And ending is a lot different, whereas Killian offers him to be a stalker. Oh, should I give it away?
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So
you don't want it to be ruined.
So, yeah, spoiler alert.
Listen to the next 30 seconds.
So, spoiler, in the book, he does end up becoming a stalker.
Ah,
so he does accept being a stalker instead.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a 300-page book, and I guess it's broken down into 100 chapters. And the chapters count backwards because it's kind of like a time. It starts with 100 minus .. And it goes. So as you get through the chapters, the final chapter just reads 000.
Oh, neat. I mean, I have a couple of Stephen King, but I've not read them.
I'm a fan, and I guess this is one of the books he wrote in the shortest amount of time. Mm-hmm. I think he wrote it in like a week. Something obscene.
Right.
Crazy. Where he just sat down and wrote it out. Mm-hmm. And 300 pages. 100 chapters. Okay, yeah.
Anything else for facts and trivia?
The footage of the attacking helicopters is from the 1976 remake of King Kong.
Yes, that is true, because in the audio commentary for the film, yeah, Paul Michael Glazer does mention the fact that is stock footage that they use.
That's crazy. And
that wasn't footage they actually shot for the movie. So I don't, I'm not 100% sure it's from King Kong, but it definitely looks like it's from King Kong. I know it is not stuff they actually shot for The Running Man. So they
just got love
it from somewhere else.
That a movie that's about a dystopian future uses footage from a movie 12 years before
yes.
it came out. Yeah. Schwarzenegger wears a World Gym sweatshirt in the scene after he escapes from prison. At the time, World Gym was actually owned by Schwarzenegger.
There you go. Some free advertising. Why not?
That's all I got for fun facts and trivia, man. What else you got?
All right. So last thing, because we kind of mentioned this about, you know, the bitch dying. I can't even say his name now.
Dynamo.
I always got to screw up someone's name in this show. All right. So Dynamo was played by Erlen van Lith, who was a classically trained baritone opera singer.
Right.
So when Paul Michael Glazer heard about this, he wanted him to actually sing in the movie. So that wasn't in the script. The studio was not happy they had them do that in the movie.
I have no idea why.
I kind of liked it.
You like the opera?
And I did like that.
When he shot his electric bolts out and lit up his name, his fucking light bright name.
It reminds me of Grossberger from Stir Crazy when he sings in the prison cell.
I haven't seen that in so long.
It was just that beautiful moment. And just it just took me back to that.
So. Hey, to each his own, Bill.
Yep, to each their own. So let's move on to the box office. So this movie was released on November 13th, 1987. The budget of the film was somewhere between $27 to $30 million. It ended up grossing $38.1 domestically. It was number one during its first 2 weeks of release. And then during its third week, Three Men and a Baby came out and basically just slaughtered everyone for the next 2 months.
Yeah, and to think that this movie did get pushed back a few months because it was going to initially be released really close to Predator,
mm-hmm.
which would have been kind of crazy and it would have been a big mistake.
Yeah, I wonder if it would have been better if this got released before Predator, because Predator is so superior.
In every way.
Every way to this film.
Yeah.
Or if that would have hurt Predator if this one came out, because it's just like, oh, that last Schwarzenegger movie was so-so, but moving on to reviews. So when growing up in the 80s, we loved catching At the Movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert on PBS to hear their reviews and watch clips from upcoming movies. Their opinion of The Running Man was unanimous. They both gave it a thumbs down.
What?
Yeah. And here we go, Jason. This is kind of surprising. Siskel found The Hunters to be kind of bland. He was getting tired of Arnold's.
Well, if he called them hunters and not stalkers, then yeah, he was tired. Yeah.
And he was tired of Arnold Schwarzenegger doing the one-liner thing. Gene did not find the film interesting either, but he did like the behind-the-scenes elements that went into the making of the show, which we both kind of mentioned.
Right.
And both enjoyed Richard Dawson's performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's from...
All right. Fair enough.
Ebert. All right. So, I guess this takes us to final thoughts. So, Jason, what are your final thoughts on The Running
Man? You know, I was just going to run through some of those one-liners.
Go for it.
Which I just can't get enough of. They're so bad. They're good. Actually, I do. There's a line that I surprised me that I thought was really funny. I laughed out loud. There's a back and forth between Amber and Richard. Sorry, Richard. Ben Richards. Amber says, you know, they're running, they're tired, they're exhausted, they're running through the arena being chased by the bad guys. And Amber says, we should have gone to Hawaii. And Ben Richards replies, I had the shirt for it, but you fucked it up. because he had a terrible, like, flower pattern Hawaiian shirt on in the airport and earlier in the film.
That shirt right away screamed fugitive on the run.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. After he kills Sub-Zero with the barbed wire, he said he was a real pain in the neck. And then he uses the chainsaw against Buzzsaw, and poor Buzzsaw takes a chainsaw to the crotch. Not good.
Ooh, yes.
That was awfully violent. And Schwarzenegger after that says, oh yeah, he had to split. And then of course, after hitting, or I should say killing, poor Jim Brown, man. Jim Brown was looking svelte in this movie, man. Jim Brown was looking good.
Yeah.
He looked like he's fit, man. And he's fireballing this, running around with his flamethrower. And of course, Schwarzenegger gets the best of him and Jim Brown exploding everywhere. And afterward, Schwarzenegger just basically looks right into the camera and says, what a hothead. And then an older woman named Agnes calling Ben Richards. She says, he's one mean motherfucker.
Yes.
Love that line. Oh, so we talked about Paul Michael Glaser and his kind of some of the difficulties he had as director on this. But also I didn't know this, man. Paul Michael Glaser was an actor. He was freaking Starsky in Starsky and Hutch.
Jason, that was my first show that I fell in love with, primetime show that I fell in love with as a kid. I loved Starsky and Hutch.
Really? I never got into it. I know it was a fan favorite. Like, I mean, I know it was a popular show. I never really got a chance to give it a shot.
Just the opening theme with the car, and they would do these slow-mo action shots or freeze frame shots and stuff like that. I loved. I don't even remember really the episodes, but yeah. I just remember as a kid just pretending that I was Starsky and my dad was Hutch, or he was Hutch and I was Starsky, and they had Huggy Bear who would go to every episode to get their information.
Right.
And oh yeah, that was probably the first show that wasn't like a kid's show that I was a fan of. Yeah, I love Starsky and Hutch. Loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And Paul Michael Glaser would go on to, did you mention this earlier? I think he directed 3 Miami Vice episodes.
Yeah.
The Prodigal Son, Smuggler's Blues, and Calderon's Return. Calderon's Return Part 2, Calderon's Demise. But I didn't realize he had a good run there for a minute. He obviously did this, The Running Man, but then he goes on to do The Cutting Edge. A little Dee Sweeney. The Air Up There. A little Bacon.
I saw that in the theater.
And Kazam.
Yeah, Kazam, not so much. But
those are big titles though.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big television director.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, yeah, I just had no idea this guy, multi-talented dude, doing a lot.
It was a funny story I heard about him. So going back, that he was not happy being on Starsky and Hutch, and he actually kind of wanted to get out. And one of the deals for him and David Soul to stay, because they weren't happy with the scripts and the studio didn't care because they were getting ratings, and they both wanted to leave. But I guess Paul Michael Glaser said, I'll stay on the show, but I want to start directing. I want to learn to direct. I want to start directing some of these shows. And that was part of the thing that they got him to stay. But in a way, it kind of blackballed him a little bit. Mm. So even when the show was over, he had a tough time getting work until Miami Vice, and they brought him on, and that kind of kickstarted him back again into getting directing roles.
Good stuff. Well, that's really, I mean, I have some deep questions for you, Bill.
But, yeah,
okay, you want to jump right into that?
Yeah, let's do some questions.
Hey, Bill, would you want to see a reality game show like in the same vein of this kind of concept today? This made me think of the reality competition show American Gladiators. You remember that one?
Oh, yes.
So I was a fan of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely entertaining, where you have kind of ordinary Joes going up against these intimidating athletes or bodybuilders. So they're going up like against pro wrestlers, pro football players, martial artists, whomever. And they're put into these events. Like there's the joust and there's like, I actually have it right here. We've got the hang tough, the assault, the breakthrough and conquer, the whiplash, the swing shot, the wall, skytrack, all these events in American Gladiators. It was pretty awesome. And it was said that we're somewhere in my research that American Gladiators was somewhat kind of influenced by this movie, which is not entirely true if you look at it. American Gladiators, the concept for that show started in the early 80s, but I didn't realize American Gladiators had a run from 89 to 97.
Wow, it was really on that long?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I thought it was like a 3 or 4 year deal. I didn't think it was on that long.
But do we need another show like that today?
yeah, do I want to watch a show where they're going around killing people like that?
Right. I meant to, I asked it so seriously, and it is meant to be tongue in cheek. Yeah. Cause I was like, oh yeah, where the, you know, contestants are hardened criminals and you don't, you know, you root for them to actually lose. You root for the contestants to lose. And if they lose, they die.
I wonder if we ever will get to that point, though. That does kind of make me nervous that this show may happen someday, not in our lifetime, right? Not my kid's lifetime, but
oh my God. Just to really get the ratings, to really up the stakes.
I mean, technically, think about it.
Over the top.
We did used to do this. I mean, the Romans used to do this with the the Colosseum and throw Christians out to the lions. So, yeah, it could come back. History tends to repeat itself.
Yep. Yeah. Here's a question for you. Should the rocket sleds going down, just can't get away from it. I got to come back to the rocket sleds going down the metal, with the metal frames going down the chutes, the chute tunnels. Should that become the new one-man bobsled event in the Olympics? And you just, you automatically get a gold medal if you just survive.
I know.
you just have to make it through alive.
I would love to know how fast they were going. That would be amazing.
I'm there for the Winter Olympic broadcast if this is an event.
Yes. I think if I was in my 20s, they could guarantee there was a safe way that I would land. I would love to try that.
Yes, absolutely.
Not now.
Right.
But yeah, in my 20s, maybe I would have loved to get on one of those rocket sleds and maybe, you know, drop me in water or at least some foam cushioning or something. But no, you're not shooting me into a nylon.
You just landed one of those foam pits, like they do, like all the extreme sports guys do when they're practicing tricks and they're, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a gymnasts
or do that. Or you know, a ball pit or something.
That's what Bill wants.
Yeah.
Just wants to land into a giant pit full of balls. here's a question. Let's go down the list, Bill.
Okay.
Sub-Zero. Oh, God. We've got Captain Freedom. We've got Fireball, Buzzsaw, and Bitch Dynamo. Mm-hmm. Or as you like to call him, Bitch Domino. And you're telling me they couldn't come up with a better idea for a stalker than those four idiots or whatever? Five idiots, you know. So my idea is, and I'm putting you on the spot here, who would be a better stalker? Who would make for a better stalker? I'm going to give you a little bit of time while I throw out a few options.
Okay, go ahead.
I came up with Lumberjack. He has a giant axe.
Okay.
So one of the arenas, like it's like you run through a forest. And he's, mm-hmm. you know, and he's this giant dude with a giant flannel on, just chasing you with an axe, like a Paul Bunyan type.
Gotcha.
All right. I've got the Slice and Dice twins.
Slice and Dice twins.
They're both dressed up as chefs.
Oh, okay.
And they have swords and knives.
Okay.
All right. Here's my last one. I just call him Driver. And he just runs around with his bag of golf clubs.
Oh, nice.
I knew it. See, I got you.
Yeah.
You were thinking something else, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah. But that's his main weapon of choice is, of course, the driver.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm thinking of like some kind of hillbilly thing with a pitchfork. That's what.
Ooh. That's kind of creepy, man.
Yeah.
That's creepy on top of the danger element. I mean, that's good. Okay.
So they could be like in a cornfield. Yeah. Maybe pitchfork. Yeah.
And that's then, a good name for a stalker.
So the arena is like in a cornfield. And
great, man. There you go. The corn maze.
Yeah.
Of course.
Exactly.
How's that not already a horror film?
It might be.
Either called Corn Maze or Pitchfork is the name of your main villain. I mean, that's good stuff, man.
So, you know, if Blumhouse is listening to this, they've already got this in development now. So you're welcome.
Speaking of better characters, so I made the mistake of, I'm confusing this with other Schwarzenegger films that came out within a 3 to 5 year period. And I kept confusing Total Recall for some reason with Running Man. And so immediately I thought, I've got two questions. First of all, would this have been better if it were directed by Paul Verhoeven? Because there's a satirical aspect to, like with the climbing dollars commercial.
Yes.
Would this have been better with him at the helm?
Oh yeah.
I don't know how much closer to the actual novella to Stephen King, AKA Richard Bachman's novella it would have been, but mm-hmm. I think he could have done something with this.
Yes. And they are remaking this.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, that's a great call. He would have been perfect for this.
Yeah.
But like I said, unfortunately, Paul McLeod was put in a bad situation. He only had 2 days.
Oh, yeah. You can't really. I'm not putting it on him.
Yeah. You can't.
Yeah. I still like this movie. But speaking of Total Recall, so I was also thinking, would this film have been better if Quato was in it? Come on, Bill. I'm baiting you, Bill.
Quaid.
Thank you.
Quaid.
I'm just saying. So you brought up the remake, the reboot, which was literally, there was an announcement made just this year, February of this year, February 2021. A new adaptation of the novel is in development at Paramount Pictures with Edgar Wright directing and Michael Bacall writing the script. So Edgar Wright, I'm a fan of some of his work.
I was very excited to hear this. I'll be honest. This one of the few times I'm like, yep, please try to remake this. I don't know if it's supposed to be a series or a movie, but I'm in.
What else do you have, Bill? I think I'm going to tap out, man.
Yeah, like I said in the beginning, not one of my favorite Schwarzenegger films. It definitely falls under the second tier. Watching it again, it certainly doesn't hold up as much as some of the other ones do. So I think that's what makes the announcement of a remake pretty exciting, because I think they're going to make a really cool movie. But yeah, I think I just love the whole idea and the concept. And I think that's what finally remember more than the actual movie itself. And going back and watching it and just seeing, oh yeah, this definitely needed some work.
I couldn't agree more, Bill. The groundwork has been laid. Yeah. That's what the concept is, what attracts me to this film still. And that's what the setup is great. It still is my favorite part of the movie. It's just getting amped up for the show itself.
Yeah.
And you know, Richard Dawson sells it, makes it work. So this, again, you put it perfectly in the beginning, second tier Schwarzenegger film. It is worth watching. I would recommend it because it's part of Schwarzenegger's legacy. I mean, it's part of his body of work and it has its place, has some really, really awful one-liners, and he's doing his Schwarzenegger thing. So I think there is something, you know, that's inspired about it just with the concept alone. And there's obviously got to give credit to Stephen King too, for it's kind of his idea at the core.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. We have a programming note. So the All 80s Movies podcast will not release a show next week in observance of Memorial Day weekend. So hopefully if you've missed some of our past episodes, this gives you time to catch up. But when we come back, we will be discussing one of the biggest films of the 1980s, the sci-fi action movie Aliens.
Yes, sir.
Sigourney Weaver. So as always, please subscribe and rate us. You can email us at all80smoviespodcast@gmail.com. Please send us your feedback, questions, or recipes to share. You can follow us on Facebook at All 80s Movies Podcast or tweet us at @podcastall80s. Until then, have a totally great day, everyone.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night, world.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.